اقعد في ده كده ماشي بسم
الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي ليس لأولية الابتداء ولا لأدبية الانقضاء وانحصرت الأوصاف عن كمه معرفته ورضعت عظمته العقول والذي لا تواري عنه سماء سماء ولا أرض أرضا. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على سيد البطحاء سيد المرسلين والأنبياء أبي القاسم محمد المصطفى.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل
فرجه وعلى الجوهرة القدسية البتول العذراء سيدة النساء فاطمة الزهراء وعلى بعلها أمير المؤمنين وبنيها الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
لا سيما على بقية الله وحجته الكبرى الذي بيمنه رزق الورى وبوجوده ثبتت الأرض والسماء ولولاه لصاحت الأرض بأحدها واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين من حين عداوتهم إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقال الله تبارك وتعالى في كتابه الكريم: واعلموا أنما غنمتم من شيء فأن لله خمسه وللرسول ولذي القربى واليتامى والمساكين وابن السبيل. صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
This is the verse of Holy Quran from Surah Al-Anfal, verse 41, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is telling us, and know that whatever thing you gain, a fifth of it is for Allah and for the Messenger and for the next of kin. And the orphans, and the needy, and the wayfarer. This ayat of Quran is the clear evidence about khums being wajib and an obligation in all of us. First of all, the word khums in Arabic is how many of you can read Arabic? Raise your hand if you can't read Arabic. Okay, so most of you can read it. Let me write down in Arabic as well. So the word khums is written in two ways in Arabic: al-khums or al-khums. Both ways are okay. Literally speaking, the meaning of that is one-fifth. So the word khums actually means one-fifth. It can be recited khums or khumus. This part of the furud deen is part of the basic teachings and wajibs of Islam. Things which are mentioned in the furud deen, the branches of the religion, are not the only wajibs in Islam, as some people But see, these are the most important wajibs of Islam. That's why we mentioned them in Furu'd-Din. Wajib. The list of wajibat is way more than just that. So we have a lot of wajibs, but these are the most important ones. So, Qums is a wajib based on the ayat of Quran and hadith. So it's something mentioned in Quran itself. And it's wajib upon us to pay the qums once yearly. We fix a date of qums. It is called the date of qums, once in a year. And whenever that date arrives, we pay 1/5, that is 20% of the total savings. Now, date of qums, how the date of qums is determined? So, date of qums is determined as after becoming valid, when you start your first job, that's your date of qums. That's why I ask the youth to remember when they start their first job. Some people don't remember when they started the first job, and this is a problem. We need to remember the date when we start our first job after becoming valid. Next year, when the same date comes, that's your date of qums automatically. For example, you started your first job after becoming baligh and Islamically mature, according to the Islamic definition of the word. Let's suppose you started it on 1st of January. So when the 1st of January comes next year, that's the date of your qums. So the day starts with the Adhan of Fajr. So as soon as the time of Adhan of Fajr arrives, it will be wajib on you to pay off your qums. That's the way it works. So you need to first remember what is the date of your qums by remembering when did you started your first job. Are you allowed to change your date of qums? Yes, you can change your date of qums anytime you want. All you need to do is to pay your qums again. If you want to change your date of qums, let's suppose from 1st of January, if that was your date of qums, to 1st of June, all you need to do is to pay your qums on 1st of June again. And then onwards, 1st of June will become your date of qums. Some people ask the question that qums is just mentioned once in the Holy Quran, whereas zakat is mentioned so many times in the Holy Quran. Well, the word zakat in Arabic, literally speaking, means taxes. Literal meaning, if you go deep into the word, it doesn't mean taxes actually, it means growth, a numu, growth. But it's used for the taxes, which means all the taxes that we pay, which includes the qums as well, which includes the fitra as well, any taxes of Islam. So the word zakat includes the zakat and the qums and the fitra. And qums is necessary to be paid with the niyat of qurbatan ilallah. Qurbatan ilallah means seeking the nearness of Allah. If you didn't do the niyat of qurbat, I am paying my khums to seek the nearness of Allah, qurbatan ila Allah. If you didn't make that intention, it's not counted to be khums. Because khums is an ibadat and worship of Allah. And every worship and ibadat of Allah requires a niyat and intention. If you do a worship without the niyat, it's not counted to be the worship. So niyat is the essence of the ibadat. If the niyat is missing, then that ibadat is invalid. It didn't even start. So it's not appropriate to say the word. It's ibadat is batil. We say batil when it actually, at least it should start. You know, it didn't even start. It's not even called an ibadat to begin with, because it starts after the niyat. Niyat is something that has to be before the worship, throughout the worship, till the end of the worship. So niyat is a continuous thing in your heart. You don't have to say it with your tongue. You just have to have the theme in your heart. That's how the niyat and intention is. But it has to be made before the worship, throughout the worship, till the end of the worship. For example, you are praying. So you have to make your intention, I'm praying 2 rakats of prayers within the time, qada qurbatan ila Allah, 2 rakats of fajr prayers within the time. That is qada qurbatan ila Allah, to seek the nearness of Allah. So this is the intention, you don't have to say it. But before you start your prayers, your niyat has to be there. And throughout your prayers, it has to be there till the end of your prayers. Let's suppose in the middle of the salat, in the middle of prayers, you forgot what you were doing. You're just lost. If somebody asks you, hey, what are you doing? You don't know what you're doing. Let me think. That means you are lost. Your mind is somewhere else. You don't remember what you're doing. So if you are lost, your salat is already batil, because your niyat is gone. The niyat is something that has to be from the beginning of the action, through the action, continuously there, till the end of the action. As soon as you are out of the niyat, the ibadat is already gone. So this is true for all the worships that we do, and khums is no different. Khums is also an ibadat of Allah, so it requires niyat. It's very important to remember. Because there are some people who say, you know, my dad was such a nice person, he used to do a lot of charity work, help the poor people, but he never paid khums. Can those charities be counted in the place of khums? And the answer to that is that khums is an ibadat of Allah, a worship of Allah. And every ibadat requires niyat. Did your dad do the niyat of paying the khums? The answer to that is no. The charities are not going to be wasted. None of our good deeds are wasted. Allah does not waste our good deeds. But that's a different thing. That will not be counted in the place of khums, because khums is an ibadat which requires the niyat. And niyat has to be done before the action, not after the action. So it's very important to remember that you have to do it with a niyat and intention. So the first thing to remember is the date of your khums. Date of your khums is not necessary to be remembered. Then why are we asking that, to remember the date? Because you can pay khums every month. It's not necessary to remember the date of khums and pay it once in a year. You can pay it every month as well. As soon as you make an income, you get weekly. And paid weekly, you can pay khums weekly. If you are paid daily, you can pay khums daily. But that becomes very difficult for the regular people. And on the other hand, Islam allows, the laws of our Islamic jurisprudence allow us to spend our money on all our necessities of life for 1 full year. Now, combining this facilitation of Islam that allows us to spend our money on our necessities of life throughout the year for one full year, the mujtahideen and the scholars say that you are allowed to pay your homes once in a year based on that facilitation of Islam. Otherwise, if somebody wants to pay homes per month, he can do so. That will be, you will end up paying more money, and that will be more difficult for you to keep track of your funds. So this is why we say you can just pay once in a year, because Islam allows you to use your money for all your necessities of life for one full year. And we will benefit from that facilitation from Islam, and we pay just once in a year. So when that's the case, then we have to remember the date of homes. And the date of homes is calculated by the date when you started your job first. So, homes is important in Islam to a very high level. Let me write down this hadith for you, so you realize the importance of homes. This is from Imam Sahib al-Zaman alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
التوقيع المبارك. التوقيع, we call to those of the hadith of Imam Sahib al-Zaman alayhi salam in the lesser absence period that came from his side in the lesser absence period. In the lesser absence period, he had four deputies, one after the other. Not four of them at the same time, that's impossible. He doesn't have two deputies or four deputies at one time. He had one deputy at a time, and that's valid even today. One mujtahid is the na'ib of the imam, not two, not three, not four, not ten. Just like in the lesser absence period, there was one deputy at a time. When he passed away, Imam alayhi salam appointed the second one. When he passed away, Imam appointed the third one. When he passed away, Imam appointed the fourth one, right? So they were not four deputies at the same time. That's impossible. They're not two deputies. Two people are not naib of the Imam at the same time. That's impossible. There's one person who is naib of the Imam. So same was the case in lesser absence period. There was one deputy at a time. Total, there were four, one after the other. All those four deputies in the lesser absence period were serving as a liaison between the community and the Imam. So all the questions that people had, they used to bring the questions to the deputy. And this deputy of the Imam was taking the questions to the Imam. And the answers used to arrive in the written form. In Ilm al-Hadith, the knowledge of the traditions, those of the Hadith of Imam alayhi salam that came in the written form to the deputies in the lesser absence period, those narrations are called, you know, we call it a tawqi' al-mubarak, tawqi'. So this is one of the tawqi'at. Imam Sahib al-Zaman has said this is in the written form, the answers that came to one of those deputies. That الله والملائكة والناس أجمعين على من أكل من مالنا درهما حراما. Means the la'nat of Allah and the angels and والناس أجمعين, all the human beings, on the person who eats up one dirham from our money as haram. So you can understand how much important is that in the eyes of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. No one is allowed to eat even one dirham of the Qums money. That's their money. We have to pay to them. That's our test. In the real sense, the entire wealth we have is belonging to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We are just an amanat carrier. It's nothing belongs to us. We are not supposed to consider the wealth that we make as ours, because in the real sense, nothing is ours. Everything belongs to Allah. And we have been entrusted with this amanat and divine trust. That's our test, how we behave with this wealth and the divine trust. So there's a limited chunk of money, and everything of the world of matter is limited, and everything of the metaphysical world is limitless. So we have everything limited in this world of matter. And this is our test when we have resources given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to us. How do we deal with these resources? Do we fulfill our obligations? Do we forget Allah? Do we forget the poor people around us? Are we fulfilling our wajib obligations? Are we delaying it, bringing excuses, and so on and so forth? These are all our tests. So all those people who go hungry are not because Allah did not provide sustenance and risk for them. Allah provides risk and sustenance for everyone. He's the Razzaq. He's the one who provides sustenance to for everything and everyone. And the reason why a lot of people go hungry is because there are some other humans who are blocking their risk. Like Imam Ali al-Islam has said in his hadith, ma
jazaa salli ala Muhammad Ali Muhammad.
This is the hadith of Imam Ali al-Islam where he says, ma that means no poor person goes hungry except due to the fact that some rich person is enjoying with that wealth. So somebody who is rich is enjoying and rejoicing with the wealth he has gained, and that is causing the suffering for some poor person who is hungry somewhere else. So whenever we have money, the bottom line is this. Whenever we have money more than the necessities of our life, we must think that this money actually doesn't belong to us in the real sense. Even though you may have earned it, but it's an amanat of Allah and a test of yours, how you go through this test and take care of your financial wajibat and obligations. So coming back to the point, I was saying that Qums is very important. We can understand from this tawqee of Imam Sahib al-Zaman al-Islam, la'nat of Allah and the angels and all the human beings and the person who eats one dirham as haram from their money. So that's not an option. So we have to pay off the khums. When we pay the khums, it's not something that we are doing a favor upon the Prophet or Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. We are, in the real sense, we are favoring our own selves. Because by paying the money, not only we are making our money and wealth tahir, Islamically clean, but we are actually making our souls tahir. Okay, it's not just about the money, it's about our souls, because love of money, having a love affair with the money and the material belonging of this world is the what we call hubbud dunya in Arabic, love of this world and its material belongings, is the biggest najasat of the soul. So anyone who is attached with this money, his soul is najis from the inside. The one who is more attached is more najis. The one who is totally into this world is basically drowned in najasat. This is one of the reasons why we feel so much pain at the time of death, right? You have heard so much when angel of death comes and takes the soul out, what we call in Arabic as sakaratul maut. Nazaka alam. This Urdu mein kehte hain nazaka alam. When the soul is taken out from the body, there's a lot of pain, right? We heard so many stories from scholars about how much pain a person feels at the time of death when soul is taken out. Do you ever think why the pain? Do you think the angel of death is an unprofessional guy? He doesn't know how to handle his job? No, he's the most professional person around. He has taken the souls of hundreds of millions of billions of human beings up till now. There's no one more professional than him for this job. Then why the pain? Because we human beings have acquired attachments with this world. All those various kinds of loves that causes us to do various types of harams in our life. Love of lusts and desires, and so on and so forth. And all those attachments and loves that our soul has acquired through the duration of our life, all those attachments have to be detached one by one by the angel of death. Death is going to cause a lot of pain, because it's a 60-year, 50-year, 70-year affair. It takes a lot of time and it's a lot of pain to detach all those loves. So, love of money is a najasat of the soul. Love of dunya, love of the temporary belongings of this temporary world is the biggest najasat of the soul, which is the reason why some people are not able to pay their homes, because they love their money and they love dunya. So these people, their souls are najis. Where are we supposed to pay the homes? We'll come to that point later on at the end of our discussion. But first we'll talk about what are those things upon which the homes is levied in Islam. There are seven things. Can I erase this?
Yes, please.
You have these lectures on this. Could this be possible if it's going to be sent on our
email? My notes are in Arabic or in Farsi, so I don't think it's beneficial for me to send it to you. It's not in English. Is levied on seven things. First is money. equities, your stocks, your bonds, your stocks and bonds and retirement funds, and in America we call it 401k. So whatever is the term used in Ireland about the retirement funds, stocks, bonds, or any form of monetary instruments. And the second thing is the minerals. And the third is the treasure. And I'll explain it. And the fourth is halal money, which is mixed up with haram. These are the total seven things upon which the khums is applied in Islam: the money and all the monetary instruments of various types, all of our financial gains, profits, benefits, the minerals of various types. This is usually not related to you and me in our lives, so those are not relevant things in our everyday life, but those are, we need to know about that as well. Treasure, the gold and silver, which is also not a relevant thing for our everyday life. What is relevant to us is actually number one and number four in our everyday lives, possibly. Halal money mixed up with the haram money. And number five, jewels or pearls, which are acquired by diving into sea, into oceans or water or rivers. And the sixth one is the war booty, which is also not relevant nowadays. And number seven is the land purchased by a zimmi kafir from a Muslim person. Kafirs are categorized into two categories: either they are zimmi or they are harbi. Ahlul zimma and ahlul harb. So harbiyin and zimmiyin. So zimmi is that kafir which is living inside an Islamic government and respects the Islamic constitution, the Quran and the values and so on and so forth. There's a list of conditions that he respects and abides. So we respect those people, their life, their wealth, their belongings, their dignity. It's all respected and protected by the Islamic government. So right now, obviously, the Islamic government is only in Iran. So this rule also is applied only there. So what is relevant to our lives here in the West is one and four only. So all the monetary instruments that you may have in any kind, in any form, and if we have some money, God forbid, where the haram gets mixed up with the halal. This is where we need to know about paying the khums. Now, It is, there's a list of things that I would like to mention here. Where the khums is not wajib to pay. The first thing is, when the khums is not wajib, is on the inheritance money. So the money that we received in inheritance from our parents, our ancestors, or any other relative from whom we inherit, we are not obliged to pay the khums on that money. If we know that that person used to pay the khums. If you know that that person didn't pay the khums in his money, then it would be wajib on us to pay the khums. For example, if my father passed away and he left behind some money, I inherit the money. It's not wajib on me to pay because I know my father used to pay the khums. But if someone knows that my father didn't pay the khums, then the inheritance money will also have khums on it. Okay, please keep that in mind. Inheritance does not have khums if that person used to pay the khums. Inheritance will have the khums on it if the person did not pay the khums. Same is valid for the mehr. The mehr that the wives receive from the husband. Mehr, the dowry. So the same applies on that as well. Mehr money doesn't have khums on it. Unless if the wife knows that my husband does not pay the khums. If you know your husband doesn't pay the khums, then it will be wajib on you to pay khums on the mehr. If your husband pays the khums regularly, then it's not wajib to pay khums on your mehr. Okay? Well, mehr is something which is unfortunately not paid in our society, and that's a problem. Husbands are required in Islam to pay the mehr, and pay the mehr straight away. And the wives are eligible to ask for their mehr, which some of the wives don't ask because they don't want to, you know, jeopardize their relationship with the husband, and the husbands are psychologically blackmailing the wives, you know, or forcing them psychologically to get it forgiven so they don't end up paying the mehr, which is all condemned in Islam. This behavior is condemned in Islam. Mehr has to be paid straight away, and it's wajib to be paid, no ifs and buts. It's the right of the wife, and it has to be paid straight away. On the day one of your marriage, you should pay your mehr. If you put your mehr as, for example, going for the Hajj, let's suppose the wife had her mehr going, the husband should take her for Hajj or take her for Ziyarat, then going for Hajj becomes wajib on that wife in the same year, because mehr belongs to you, right? And you have a right to demand the mehr straight away on the first day of your marriage. You are eligible to demand. Whether you demand or not, you are eligible to demand, and the money actually belongs to you. When you have the money, you are mustati, you have the istita'at, you have what it takes to do the hajj, to go for hajj, and going for hajj, you are financially capable of going for Hajj, so it's wajib on you to go for Hajj in the same year. Not going for Hajj and delaying it is a bigger sin in Islam. So mehr is exempt from the khums if you know your husband used to pay the khums. If you know he doesn't pay the khums, then it will be wajib on you to pay mehr on khums of the mehr as well. The third thing which is exempt from the khums is the money we receive from non-Muslims.
Form of
those who don't believe in forms.
Mala sahab, sorry to interrupt. Receiving money from non-Muslim in the form of like a gift or
in any form,
salary,
in any form. So money we receive from the non-Muslims, we know the non-Muslims don't believe in khums, they haven't paid the khums, it's not wajib on us to pay the khums on that money. Likewise, if the money you receive from those who don't believe in khums, those Muslims who don't believe in khums, those sects of Islam who don't believe in khums, so we know they haven't paid the khums because they don't believe in khums. So it's not wajib on you to pay the khums on the money you receive from those sects of Islam who don't believe in khums. It's not wajib. This is exempt. And the next thing is a controversial thing, a controversial between mujtahids. Controversial. It depends on which mujtahid you are following. There are some mujtahideen who say that it's wajib to pay khums on the gifts that you receive. There are some others who say it's not wajib to pay khums on the gifts. So it depends which mujtahid you are following. This is a controversial issue. So gifts are exempt in the fatwa of some mujtahids. Likewise, the money a poor person receives.
The help
that a poor person receives, the person who himself is a fakir person and someone else is helping him out, this fakir is not obliged to pay the khums. He himself is receiving the khums, receiving the help from others, he is not obliged to pay the khums himself. Now fakir is a term which we need to understand. Fakir is someone. In Islamic jurisprudence, we define faqir as الَّذِي لَا يَمْلِكُ مَعُونَةَ السَّنَةَ, someone who doesn't have the expenses of 1 year of his life. So, it's called faqir. Anyone who doesn't have expenses that can suffice for as much money as it suffices for 1 year of his expenses. So if somebody doesn't have at all, he's also a faqir. If someone has partially, he has the money, but it doesn't suffice for 1 year of his expenses, he's still called a faqir. So let's suppose somebody has expenses for 11 months of his needs for 11 months. He doesn't have the expenses for the 12th month, he's also called a faqir. It's not necessary that a faqir is somebody who's begging on the street. If you understand the this definition, you will realize that faqir can be a person who is a respectable person in the society, but he can't make the both ends meet, so he is falling short to fulfill the needs of his life for one full year. So he's on the pay. And we can pay several types of Islamic charities to him. So Faqir is again a person who has expenses, who has shortage in his funds. So his funds do not cover the needs of one full year. Either he doesn't have any money, or he has some money, but it doesn't suffice for the expenses of one full year. It suffices for a few months, a few weeks, a few days only, not one full year. So we are allowed to pay him various charities of Islam, certain charities of Islam, to fulfill the needs of one full year. It is important to remember that we are allowed to spend our money on the necessities of life. This is a very important point. We are allowed to spend our money on the necessities of life within the framework of our social status. That's a very important point to remember. Lots of things depend on this. In Islam, we are allowed to spend our money on our necessities of life within the framework of our social status. So there are two things we need to keep in our mind. What are the necessities of life? What is my social status? If I spend the money more than my necessities of life, it's problematic. That will be israf, overspending. And we know that israf is haram in Islam. And if we spend the money more than our social status, haysiyatun urfiya, how we call it, sha'nun urfi. If we spend our money more than our social status, that's also not allowed in Islam. So these are very important points, general principles in our life when about spending the money. When you get your salary, you are allowed to spend your money on the necessities of life only. So we buy what we need. We don't buy what we like. There's a fine line between two things. Okay? If we buy the stuff that we need, that's okay in Islam. There's no problem. And anything that you have purchased in your life which you need during the Khums fiscal year, you don't have to pay Khums on that. But that's perfectly okay in Islam to buy something that you need during the Khums fiscal year. Obviously, when the date of Khums comes, let's suppose in your date of Khums is 1st of January, when the date of Khums comes, whatever money you have to pay Khums on that before spending that money, before spending the money on your necessities. Because the date of Khums has arrived, now you have to pay the Khums. But throughout the year, it's okay to spend your money on your necessities of life. You are not supposed to do overspending and israf. Every israf that we do has khums. Every haram spending that people are doing has khums on it. Let's suppose I go to the movie theater, God forbid, so to see a movie there, cinema, movie theater. So the money I spent on the petrol, driving to the movie theater, is all haram, right? Allah did not ask me to go to the cinema to see a movie. So all the money I spent on the petrol, I have to pay khums on that. And the ticket I purchased from the cinema, I have to pay khums on that. That's not part of my Islamic necessity of life, right? The money you spend on returning back from the cinema is okay, because returning back to your house is not israf. So any spendings we do on harams is has to be calculated and we have to pay homes on that. If I purchase the shaving kit to shave my beard, then I have to pay homes on the amount of money I spent on this operation of going to the market and purchasing the shaving kit with the intention of shaving my beard, which is haram. So I have to pay the homes on that amount as well. Any kind of spending which is done on haram has homes in it. So this is why I said it's very important to remember two things about our spending pattern. First, we are allowed to spend our money on the necessities of Islam, necessities of life from the Islamic perspective. So we don't spend our money on things which are not necessities, things which are haram. And second of all, we spend the money within the framework of our social status. That's the second point. What does that mean? Everyone has a social status. And Islam allows us to live a life according to our social status, to maintain our dignity and respect in the society, and not to disrespect ourselves. So, if you happen to be a heart surgeon in the United States and you are making $4 million per year and you buy a voice-operated Jaguar, $140,000, that's okay. Because that's your social status. The likes of yours in the society who make $4 million per year, that's the kind of cars they drive, right? That's okay. It depends what's your social status in the society. So, if you live a simple life, which is mustahab to do that in the path of the prophets and the imams, you get more sawab, but it's not wajib. That's mustahab. So we can't point fingers on those people who are living a life according to their social status, as long as they are doing it within the framework of their social status. Not more than that. As long as a person is living a life within the framework of his social status, it's okay. There's no problem with that. So when we live a life more than our social status, this is not allowed. For example, if I buy a BMW 7 Series, I can also afford that. I can squeeze my bills and buy a BMW 7 Series. It's not a problem. I can do that. It's not the point. That's not the point. I can afford or I cannot afford. It's not the point. The point is that car something that belongs to my status? And the answer to that is no. I'm talking about myself. It's not the point that I can afford it or I cannot afford it. That's not the point in Islam. The point is that car something belonging to my status? And the answer to that is no. So I'm not supposed to buy it, whether I can afford or I cannot afford. That's irrelevant. Okay, is that clear? So we are supposed to buy things which are belonging to our status. And everyone is the best judge about himself. What is your financial, social status in the society? People who are likes of yours, who have as much qualification as you have, family background, financial status, all those things are part of that to determine your social status. So people who are likes of yours, how do they live their lives? So you are allowed to live your life according to your social status, and that's okay. So if we live spend the money on things more than our social status, that's not allowed in Islam, and we have to pay khums on all those spendings. Just like we have to pay khums on every israf and overspendings we do on things which are not our necessity of life. Is that clear? These are two different things, necessity of life and social status. Uh-huh. So for example, let me clarify if that is still not clear in your minds. So for example, if I, for example, if for example, if I buy a Honda Accord, that's okay, I think, according to my status. So, but if I buy a BMW 7 Series, that's not okay. That's according to my status. But if I buy two Honda Accords, that's spending the money on more than my social status? No. I didn't buy a BMW 7 Series. I bought a Honda Accord. That's not more than my social status. But I bought two of them. So this is more than my necessity of life. These are two different things. Is that clear? I hope it's clear now with that example. There are two different things. Buying more than your necessity of life and buying something which is not of your social status. Both of them are problematic. Is that clear? And both of those things, and you have to pay homage on that. You are the best judge about yourself, and you should find out about your spending patterns. Anything that we have in our houses which is more than our necessity of life, we must pay homage on that. If you purchase something which is more than your necessity of life, go back to your houses and find out if you have spent your money on anything more than your necessity. Or if you have spent your money on anything which is more than your social status. Make a list of those things, if there are any, and pay homage on that. Likewise, if you purchase something, you thought it's of your necessity, but the thing is lying in your house for one full year and you did not use it. Let's suppose you bought a shirt. You never used that shirt. It's lying there in your closet for one full year. So this shows that it's not part of your necessity. If it was your necessity, you would have used it already. So one full year has passed by and the shirt is lying there. So this is a sign that it was not your necessity and this was an overspending, and we have to pay homage on that as well. Is that clear? So now let's go to the stocks, the monetary instruments. We have stocks and bonds and lands. People have lands and apartments, houses. Anywhere back home, you have lands and houses and apartments you have rented. And any house which is not used by for your residence, any house which you are not using for your own residence. You just purchase some houses, apartments, and it's your investment property. You have to pay homage on all those properties. Whenever you sell those apartments, you have to pay the homage on that. Whenever you sell those houses, those lands, you have to, first things first, you have to first pay the homage. Okay? Before, even when somebody dies, let's suppose if my father dies and I get some land from his inheritance. Inheritance doesn't have homes, we already talked about that. But if we know my father didn't pay homes, then, for example, this land I inherited from my father, this land was lying there for the last 10 years. My father could not pay homes. He used to pay homes regularly, but he could not pay homes, let's suppose, on this land because it was lying there for 10 years. It was not sold. Right? So after my father died and I inherited the land, and I know this land was there for the last 10 years because it was not sold, my father could not pay homes on this land. I cannot distribute the children, my siblings. We can't distribute the land among ourselves unless we pay the homes first. Okay, first things first, we have to pay the homes first on the land or the house upon which the homes is not paid, and then it will be distributed. Stocks, if you have money in the Wall Street, so you have to keep track of all those stocks. And there comes on that, on the date of your comes. You can't keep Imam Sahib as the one. So I'm waiting. So, okay, I'm going to pay my comes on the stocks after 10 years. Let me make money for next 10 years. So that's your problem. You can't keep the Imam waiting for 10 years for your own problem. You have to. So, this is about the money and the monetary instruments. The retirement funds, when you receive the retirement fund, you have to pay comps on that. Several years have passed by on that fund, right? So obviously, it will have comps on it. Now let's go to number four, halal money mixed up with the haram. If you have halal money mixed up with the haram, examples. Somebody works for a grocery store where alcohol is sold. First of all, that's not allowed to work in those stores. Department stores, grocery stores where they are selling haram stuff. It's not allowed to work as a cashier or any other job in that store. So now you will receive the income which has the haram stuff included in it. So now, if you know the exact amount of haram and the owner of that haram, you have to pay the money back to the owner, which usually we don't know. If you don't know the owner and you don't know the amount, that's where the problem is. In that case, if we don't know the owner and we don't know the amount, what we do is that we do musalaha with the hakimul shari, the Islamic ruler, which means the conditions fulfilling mujtahid or the alim, who is the wakil of the mujtahid. We do musalaha. Musalaha means you make a deal with the alim, who is the wakil of the mujtahid. And he will analyze your situation and the amounts and the funds you have and all that, facts and figures, and then he will give you an amount that this much you have to pay. So after taking permission from the wakil of the mujtahid, you are supposed to, if you don't know the amount, or you don't know the person at all, so in that case, what we do is that we, do the musalaha with the wakil of the alim, and this is where there are a few situations, so please pay attention. Let me tell you those situations. So, if you don't know the person who owns the haram money, then you have to pay the money after taking permission from the alim or the mujtahid. You have to pay the money as sadaqa in proxy of that person who owned that money, which you have. Money of the haram things. So, if you know the person, you are supposed to go there and pay the money back to him. If you don't know the person, if you don't know the amount, you know the person who owns the money, but you don't know the amount of the money, in that case, what you are supposed to do is that there is a controversy between you and him. So, the ruling says you have to make a settlement amongst yourselves. So, that's whatever amount you have yaqeen that you are liable that much. You're liable to pay that much. You have to pay that much at least. And the rest of the amount, which is, you don't have yaqeen, it's better to pay, but it's not wajib upon you to pay. Is that clear?
Yes. Well, just one quick question at the same time. If a person working in a grocery store, I know it's where the alcohol is served or sold, but I know it's haram, but he's in a situation that he has no other job, and he, in order to survive, and he has to work there for a while, and he's looking for the right job. What going to happen in that scenario when he get his salary every month?
Well, first of all, jobs, as you know, are in the hands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So Allah provides us the jobs we will always get the job, inshallah. What is destined for us, and the amount of money which is destined, it's up to us to earn the same amount which is destined through the halal or through the haram. That's our choice. We are not going to make any single cent, any single penny more than what is destined, and we will never lose any single penny from what is destined. Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa
Ali Muhammad wa Raja.
He wanted to pray, he went inside, he gave his horse to this person to take care of the horse for that short while. So when he came out of the masjid after the prayers, he found this guy stole the reins of the horse. The horse is standing there, the reins of the horse have been stolen. Imam Ali Islam went to the marketplace. Now, Kufa is not a big cosmopolitan city. It's a little small city with one marketplace only. Imam Ali went there to buy new reins for his horse. And he found the thief standing there. He had sold the reins there in the market. And Imam Ali Islam said to him, I have the intention to pay you the same amount that you gained from stealing this money, stealing these rings. So the narration says he gained 8 dirhams only, 8. So the same amount that he gained through stealing, Imam Ali had the intention of paying him the same amount after coming out from the masjid. He made the same amount through the haram. He would have gotten the same amount of money, not more, not less, through the halal. So first of all, we never make any money more than what we are destined. And what we are destined, no one can take it away from us. The choice and the test of Allah that we are going through in the life of this world, which is based on our freedoms, whether I choose to, I'm free to make this choice, whether I go towards halal way of making the money or haram way of making the money. I'm going to make the same amount of money. Not a single penny more. That's confirmed. The only choice I have been given by Allah is to choose the halal way or the haram way. That's my choice. It's not my choice to make more money. That's more or less is in the hands of Allah. My choice is to select between halal and the haram ways. So whatever a person is making, he is going to make the same amount through halal as well. We have trust in Allah. We should have the trust in Allah about that. And the key to that is taqwa. If we exercise taqwa in our lives, Allah provides the opening. Quran has said already, وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهَ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا. Whoever exercises taqwa, Allah provides opening for him. وَيَرْزُقْهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبْ. Allah provides the risk for him from ways that he does not think of. In other words, so it's very important to remember that there is always a way. There is always a halal way. You know, we should not go for haram. And haram money brings bala and calamities and turmoils along with it inside the house. When it comes in the house, it brings all the calamities with it. And when it doesn't stay, because there is no barakat and blessing in the haram money, it always departs. When the haram money departs, it brought the calamities inside the house and it's not going to stay because it's haram. When it departs, it takes away the iman of the person. So it brings calamities and takes the iman away. So this is not a choice. That's not an option for us to do that. We will always go for a halal. Allah will provide a halal opening. We need to keep our trust in Allah. So we were talking about halal money mixed up with the haram. So we pay the khums on that. If you have, let's suppose, halal money mixed up with the haram, you don't know the amount, you don't know the owner, you pay the khums on that, and the rest of the money is allowed for you to use in that case. If tomorrow you meet the owner of the money and he asks you to give the money back, even if he doesn't ask, you have to pay the money back to him. You can't say, I already gave the sadaqah, I already gave the khums. So even if you have given the money as sadaqah, you are still supposed to pay the money back to the owner, even though you have given the sadaqah on his behalf. Is that clear? Now, another important thing about khums is that those are the people who have never given khums in their life. How would they start calculating their khums? This is a very frequent question. So, I already explained to you that khums is wajib to be paid on the date of khums. Now, this person needs to remember, when did he start his first job? Let's suppose he started his first job on 1st of January, and since last 5 years he did not pay the khums. So what he needs to remember is that in the last 1st of January, or last 5 years, how much was his savings on the 1st of January? Think hard at how much was your savings on the 1st of January in the last 5 years. And you sum up the total money and pay khums on that amount. Any money that you earn in February or March or April or May or June, July, August, September, October, November, December does not count. You're allowed to use that money again on your necessities of life only, not more than that, and within the framework of your social status. There's no problem with that. But you are not allowed to spend your money that you have on the 1st of January without paying khums first. If you purchased anything from that money which you had with you on the 1st of January without paying the khums, that is a problem. You're not allowed to use that money until you pay the khums. So what you, if you haven't paid khums for the last 5 years, you need to remember on the last 1st of January for the last 5 years, how much money you had in your possession on the 1st of January. If that was your date of khums. If that was your date of khums. Whatever money you earned in February, March, up to December does not count. Whatever spendings you do throughout the year does not count, as long as you are spending on your necessities of life within your social status, that's perfectly okay, and that doesn't have khums on it. Is that clear? This is a very simple way of, if you don't remember how much savings you had on the date of khums, then obviously you will make an estimate. Estimation. Think hard and make an estimate how much money you had, and pay khums on that total amount. So this is how we do for those who haven't paid the khums at all up till now. The money that parents, you see in some Islamic countries, they gather the money for the marriage of their daughters, dowry, jahiz. That's allowed in Islam. And it doesn't have khums. If the father and mother are collecting stuff for the marriage of their daughter, that stuff is okay to collect, and it does not have khums. If the father cannot purchase the entire amount of the jahiz at once upon the marriage. If you don't have that sort of money to purchase the entire jahiz at the time of marriage at once, in that case, you are allowed to gather the things of Jahiz gradually and it will not have homes. If you have that much money to purchase the Jahiz at the time of marriage all at once, then you're not supposed to collect the Jahiz stuff gradually. If you collect it, you will have to pay homes as well, because you can afford the Jahiz all at once at the time of marriage. Those who are unable to collect the Jahiz stuff all at once at the time of marriage, those who are able to collect, those who are able to buy the Jahiz all at once are not supposed to collect the Jahiz. If they collect it, they have to pay homes. Those who cannot purchase the Jahiz all at once, they are allowed to collect the Jahiz gradually and they are exempt from paying the homes for that. But if you gather money for the marriage of your daughter or your son, the money will have homes always. Jahiz stuff will not have homes if you cannot buy the Jahiz all at once upon the marriage. But if you gather the money will always be liable to homes. You have to pay homes on the money. Even if you put the money aside for marrying your daughter, still you have to pay homes on that. Okay? So throughout the homes fiscal year, we are allowed to buy anything. You buy a sofa, you buy curtains, you buy a car, you buy a house, anything you need for your necessity of life. That's okay. It doesn't have homes on it. None of these things have homes on it. As long as you're buying all these things within the framework of your social status and all these things are of your necessity of life, it's not a problem. Problem is, if you buy a sofa on the 1st of January, if 1st of January was your date of homes, if you buy a sofa or a car or a house or anything else on the 1st of January from the savings of the 1st of January without paying the homes, that's the problem. On the date of homes, you cannot purchase anything without paying the homes first. Now, whom are we supposed to pay the homes to? Homes belongs to Imam Sahib al-Zaman alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala
Muhammad Ali Muhammad.
And in his absence, we are supposed to pay the homes to the conditions fulfilling mushtahid. There are conditions mentioned in the hadith of Imam Sahib al-Zaman alayhi salam. So, we respect all the mujtahids, they are all our great personalities, we must respect them. But when it comes to doing the taqleed and following, we do the taqleed of the conditions fulfilling mujtahid. Let's suppose there are 4,000, 5,000 mujtahids in the world. So we respect all of them. And we are not following all those 3,000, 4,000 mujtahids. We respect them, but we don't follow all of them. We follow one person, right? We don't follow 3,000 people at the same time. We respect all of them, but we follow one person at a time. Now, who is that one person? That one person is the one who fulfills all the conditions. All the conditions mentioned in the hadith of Imam Sahib al-Zaman. How can you make sure? We make sure by looking at the witnesses of Ahlul Khibra. Al-Khibra means the high-level professors of the Hawza. So minimum two adil witnesses are there. It's a public information. It's already published. We search for the witnesses. You can ask any alim, and they can provide you, your local resident alims can provide you about the witnesses. And you can look at the witnesses, minimum two adil witnesses, two just witnesses from Ahlul Khibra, his expert professors of the Hausa. Look at their witnesses, and that's how we start the taqleed. That's how we determine this mujtahid is a conditions fulfilling mujtahid based on the witnesses of the expert professors of the Hausa. So that's how we do the taqleed. So now when you are doing the taqleed correctly, not by the hearsay, I asked my mom, I started doing taqleed when my mom was following this mujtahid, my dad was doing taqleed of him, my friends were doing taqleed of him, my community members were doing his taqleed. Neither my mom is the Hujjat of Allah, nor my dad is an Imam or Nabi of Prophet of God. nor my community is Hujjat, nor my family is Hujjat of Allah. None of them is Islamically acceptable evidence. We don't start the tahleel like that. We start the tahleel based on the Islamically acceptable evidence. Bayyinatun shar'iyya. And Islamically acceptable evidence means minimum two adil, two just witnesses of the expert professors of the Hausa. That's how we start the tahleel. If we start the tahleel without the Islamic procedure, our tahleel is batil. So we have to start the tahleel according to the Islamically defined procedure. That Allah who asked us to do the tahleel in the time of ghaibat, Allah also told us how to. We cannot define the how to on our own. Okay. So when you do the tahleel, after looking at the witnesses of expert professors of the Hausa, minimum two witnesses, which is the Islamically acceptable evidence, bayyinatul shari'ah, now your tahleel is correct. So when you are following a conditions fulfilling mujtahid now, you are supposed to pay your homes to the conditions fulfilling mujtahid, and the conditions fulfilling mujtahid is the deputy of Imam Sahib Usman alayhi salam. This is the way it works. So you have to pay 20% qurbatan ilallah, 20% of all your money and monetary instruments and possessions. And qurbatan ilallah, let's suppose you have 100 pounds, for example, your savings on 1st of January. Let's suppose your date of comes is 1st of January and you have 100 pounds in your possession. You pay 20 pounds qurbatan ilallah as your homes to the conditions fulfilling mujtahid or the alim who is a wakil on behalf of the conditions fulfilling mujtahid. Now this 20 pounds, which is 1/5, is the khums. Now inside the khums, it is divided into two parts. Khums is divided into two parts. The first part is called Sahmul Imam. And the second portion is called Sahmus Saada. In Urdu we say Sahmus Saadat. In Arabic it's Sahmus Saada. So Sahmus Saadat means the amount which belongs to the deserving Sayyids. Half of the khums belongs to it is given to the deserving Sayyids, and the first half belongs to Imam Sahib Usman alayhi salam. We give the entire khums to the condition fulfilling mujtahid, okay, or the alim, and they will give it to the deserving Sayyids, and they will spend the money of the Sahmul Imam according to the rules of the Islamic Sharia. It's already defined how the money has to be spent. So we give the entire khums, half of it belongs to Imam alayhi salam, half of it belongs to the deserving Sayyids. 50% to Sahmul Imam, 50% is called Sahmus Saada, means the portion of the Sayyids. This is 50-50. But the whole amount has to be given to the mujtahid or the alim who is the wakil, and they will give it to the mustahab and deserving Sayyids. Now some mujtahids allow you to give the Sahmus Saada, Saadat, portion yourself to the deserving Sayyid. Some mujtahids allow that, but some don't allow it. Again, that is a controversial issue. Depends on which mujtahid you are following, and you will obey the fatwa of your mujtahid in that. Whether your mujtahid allows you to pay the 50% of that belongs to the deserving Sayyids, you pay it yourself to the deserving Sayyids. Whether your mujtahid allows you to do that or your mujtahid does not allow, in that case you have to give the whole khums to the mujtahid or his or the alim who is wakil, and they will give it to, they will spend Sahmul Imam on its expenses, and Sahmus Saada, the Saada portion, to the deserving Sayyids themselves. So this is how it is divided. Now it's very important to remember that we calculate the khums timely, and it's good that you give a little bit more than what you're obliged. to be on the safe side, to make sure that you don't have any responsibility on your shoulders. And it's wajib to give away the khums straight away because it is wajibun fauri. Wajibs are divided into several types in our Islamic jurisprudence. We have wajibun fauri and we have wajibun ghair fauri, immediate wajib and non-immediate wajib. For example, responding back to the salam of a person, right? If someone says salam to you, replying back to his salam is wajibun fauri. If you reply back after 2 minutes, you are a sinner. Because 2 minutes is counted to be a delay in the eyes of Urful Uqala wal Mutasharri'a. Islamically intellectual and religiously abiding people consider 2 minutes to be quote-unquote a delay. So if you reply back after 2 minutes, you will be a sinner. You have to reply back to the salam immediately. Because it's wajibun fauri, it's an immediate wajib. Right? Similarly, paying the khums is an immediate wajib in Islam. If khums is wajib on me, let's suppose my date of khums is 1st of January, I cannot pay it on the 2nd of January. I cannot pay it on the 3rd of January. I have to pay it immediately because it's an immediate wajib in Islam. I cannot delay. So you have to pay the khums on the date of your khums without the delay. Second of all, after you did the niyat, you took the money out, you put it aside. Now you take it to the mujtahid or the alim who is the wakil immediately, if you can. If you don't have access to the mujtahid or you don't have access to the alim who is the wakil and you are in the process of finding access to the mujtahid or the alim who is wakil. If you are in that process of finding him, that delay is allowed. Because you are in the process of finding, getting in touch with that mujtahid or the alim, you are in that process. That's okay. But if you just put it aside and you just forget about that, you don't even care about taking the money ASAP. That's not right because you now it's counted that you are delaying it. You would be a sinner if you do that. Okay? So you have to take the khums immediately to the conditions fulfilling mujtahid or the alim who is the wakil. Unfortunately, khums money has been widely missed. First of all, a huge number of our community doesn't do tahleel. And second of all, a huge number doesn't pay khums. And then only a fraction of our community does the taqleed and pays the khums. And among those who are paying the khums, huge number of the khums is misused. It reaches those hands which it does not deserve to reach. These are bitter realities of our community. And this is one of the major reasons why we are suffering, because finance and politics go hand in hand. If we are financially not doing our obligations, our Shia community on the global arena, we will always be backwards in the political and social sense. We will never prosper because we are not prospering financially. Excuse me. We're not paying almost at the end, so. Now, there's only, let me see if there is, the last thing I had in my mind to talk about was, I wanted to talk about this, we have to be particular about spending the khums and giving it to the right hand, those hands which deserve to receive it. Now, unfortunately, it's a bitter reality that huge amount of our khums is misspent. Huge amount. I can also give you some facts and figures, but I don't think it's appropriate to mention. But I have some facts and figures with me as well. But I think this much is enough to say that huge amount is misspent. And how to break this ice? We spread the awareness. We teach the people to take the right decisions and deal according to the teachings of the Sharia. Unfortunately, there are several centers, Imam Bardas, and some people who are receiving the homes who do not deserve to receive it. Some never have any ijazah from any mujtahid. And people are giving money based on the hearsay. We have to be particular about this to make sure that those who are receiving, they deserve to get the amount of the homes, because it's not my money, it's not your money, it's the money that belongs to Imam Sahib al-Zaman, it's his money. And how much active role we are playing for Islam? What are we doing for Islam? If an Islamic center is doing very less for in terms of the services that it's providing for Islam and Ahlul Bayt and Ahlul Salam, or some of the centers are actually counterproductive for Islam. So we have to be particular about that. And we are not supposed to pay the money of Imam alayhi salam for these types of people or entities which are not serving the walayat of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and the purpose of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and not spreading the mission of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Someone sent a query to Imam Sahib al-Zaman alayhi salam and about the money that we give to the Ahlul Bayt. And this is also one of the tawqi'at. So the response came to the na'ib of the imam, the deputy of the imam in the lesser absence period in the written form from Imam Sahib Uthman al-Islam. So this is what was written in the answer. Amma amwalukum, as far as your money goes, fala naqbaluha illa litathuru. We do not accept it, except for the reason that you people become tahir. Again, point to note that paying the homes is not just about making our money tahir, it's about making our souls tahir. Our soul is najis because we are attached to the material belonging of this world, and that attachment blocks us to pay the homes. So which means our soul is najis. In the hadith of Imam alayhi salam, he says, as far as your money goes, فَلَا نَقْبَلُهَا إِلَّا لِتَطْهُرُ. We don't accept it, except for the reason so that you people become tahir. He did not say your money become tahir. You people become tahir. وَمَا Then Imam alayhi salam says, وَمَا آتَانَ اللَّهُ فَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيَسِلْ وَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيَقْطَعْ. Whoever wants, he should stay connected with us. Whoever wants to break away, should break away from us. In other words, and then he says, وَمَا آتَانَ اللَّهُ خَيْرٌ مِمَّا آتَاكُمْ. And whatever Allah has already given us, whatever Allah has given us is better than what Allah has given you people. So Imam al-Islam doesn't stand in need of our money. We are not doing a favor on him. We are favoring our own selves. We are cleaning our souls. We are favoring ourselves. This should be very clear in our minds. If we realize the importance, then we can help ourselves to do this fariza promptly. And let me see if there's anything I have. I think that's pretty much the discussion that I have. So, inshallah, wa sallallahu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.